from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. On Friday, Iran held an election, and the results, the landslide re-election of incumbent President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad to his second four-year term, are in dispute as demonstrations, the most fierce in a decade, went on throughout the weekend, and followers of reformist candidate and former Prime Minister Hussein Mousavi continue to call the election results fraudulent. Four more years of Ahmadinejad? Well, we'll talk about Iran in the wake of the Friday presidential election, and we'll focus as well on what it means to geopolitics and ongoing relations with the United States with your calls and emails. Next, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's forum. On Friday, with polls showing a strong lead in the campaign's last days for reformist and youth-backed Green Movement candidate Hussein Mousavi, incumbent President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad was declared the victor by a 66.6% to 34% landslide. Two other candidates ran for the office, and voter turnout was reported to be 85%. The Interior Secretary, under the control of the present government, announced the results to cries of fraud that led to protests and clashes with police, which continued through the weekend, the worst unrest Iran has witnessed in a decade. Websites, social networks, cell phones, and text messaging were blocked, and former Prime Minister Mousavi, who declared himself the winner and urged backers to resist, was said to have been placed under house arrest. But he did appear today in a massive demonstration, as you just heard from National Public Radio, with hundreds of thousands of Iranians in the streets of Tehran, and they were urged to keep quiet in terms of their protest, at least, with respect to violence. We want to talk about what's going on in Iran with a panel of experts. We want to talk first to Scott Peterson, though, who is a Middle Eastern correspondent for the Christian Science Monitor and has been covering this, is now presently in Istanbul. And we welcome you to the program, Scott Peterson.
Thank you.
You were just in Tehran recently, and I wonder what you make of the more recent events that have occurred with former Prime Minister Mousavi appearing today, the opposition candidate, the reformist candidate, with hundreds of thousands, even though he was said to be under house arrest, and apparently a shift by the Grand Mullah Khatami saying that there will be an investigation by the Guardian Council.
Well, I think this was a very remarkable event today. I actually left this morning just a few hours before it happened, and because my visa expired, as visas of all journalists are expiring in these coming days. But this rally, as we see it, is so large, and really most important about it is that it is in defiance of a law or at least a ban on the rally. They asked for official permission to hold it. The campaign itself of Mir Hossein Mousavi wasn't sure whether or not they were going to whether they were going to carry it out and ask people to go onto the streets when really it was an illegal event. But in fact, in the end, there was such a huge number of people. And not only that, Mousavi himself actually showed up despite the large crowd. So I think for, you know, really a strike in favor of the Mousavi camp.
He showed up also with former President Khatami at his side. And one has to wonder what this means in terms of the shift by the present head of the mullahs. I mean, this is a pretty dramatic shift, saying essentially they're going to investigate after he called it a divine assessment.
Well, that's right. I mean, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei has said that. I mean, the analysts that I've spoken to, of course, who say that this investigation of the Guardians Council is going to take place are not at all convinced that it can change the result, partly because, as you noted, Khamenei has said that the result already in favor of Ahmadinejad is a divine assessment, and many people actually believe that Khamenei himself was behind making sure that that divine assessment became an Ahmadinejad landslide. So the chances of that actually shifting aren't particularly large. The analysts I've spoken in Tehran really feel that it's window dressing. That's the word that they've used to describe it, and really hoping to bide time so that things will calm down in the streets, because this really is quite an explosive situation on the streets in Tehran right now.
Not likely to be like 1979, as some are hoping?
No, the one thing, I really don't think so. I mean, there are a lot of people on the streets. And, you know, other analysts that I've spoken to, and in fact I've seen this from my own experience, that, you know, the actual Islamic system there, which is called the Nizam, has all the tools of intimidation and coercion, and it is willing to do almost anything to preserve itself. The chances of there being another revolution, if you will, that would overthrow this Islamic system really are I would say, very remote. And I think that most of the people who are there, I mean, protesting, aren't asking for that either. What they want is just a more moderate social existence. And they want to, you know, they want more freedoms personally, and they also, of course, are hoping for a slightly less aggressive foreign policy, which has isolated Iran so very much. So those are the kind of things that Mousavi has been pushing for and has really electrified people in the more moderate and reformist camp against Ahmadinejad. And that's the reason why we saw this huge turnout last Friday, 85% of the day. That's the highest in Iran's history of the last 30 years.
At least that figure, from all appearances, is accurate, even if the landslide figures are not accurate. What do you make out of the fact, though, that the Guardian Council now is being called in? The Guardian Council, I know, predetermines acceptable candidates to begin with. They also preside over elections and parliamentary majorities. But under Ahmadinejad, they got a 15 times increase in their budget. And the implication is that not only was the fix in on the election, but the fix is going to be in an ongoing sense with the Guardian Council.
Well, I think that's probably true. I mean, you know, let's remember that the Guardian Council is actually led by Ayatollah Ahmad Janati, who is one of the most powerful clerics in Iran. He's often the Friday prayer leader at Tehran Friday Prayers, and he is one of the most arch-conservative, hardline clerics in the entire system. So he is cut from the same cloth as Ahmadinejad. So, of course, from his perspective, having a candidate like Mousavi become president is really something that can only undermine the Islamic regime. It's something that can only undermine the revolutionary values, if you will, that the hardliners claim for themselves. And so for them, Mousavi is a danger. He's someone who could act even in a treasonous way by, for example, reaching out to the West or something like that. So that's their mindset. So the chances of them actually coming up and deciding that, you know, whether there was fraud or not, deciding to act on that are probably fairly remote. But what it really shows is how few options that Mousavi and his camp have to change anything in Iran. They've got the people on the street, and they have one letter that the defeated candidate has handed to the Guardian Council requesting that they're, you know, that they look at these irregularities. That's all they have.
Well, the fear is not only, as you suggest, that maybe the opening will take place, it would take place under Mousavi to the West, but also that an opening with respect to women and women's rights would take place. That's a big part of this equation, isn't it?
Well, it is, in the sense that Mousavi's wife is really a women's rights, she's pushing for women's rights. She herself, of course, was the dean of a university in Tehran, is highly educated.
And maybe suing Ahmadinejad, apparently.
And may well be suing Ahmadinejad for holding up her intelligence file on live television during one of the debates. I mean, dragging these presidential debates into a whole new depth of mudslinging, and really they were getting fairly low. But that was kind of the final straw when he held up her file and basically accused her of becoming a dean without having a proper PhD and all sorts of things that were just that really actually didn't help his case much, even with conservatives. In fact, I remember I spoke to a conservative young seminary student who told me in English how disappointed he was in the president for bringing Mousavi's wife into it, and because that really just isn't done. But it's an indication of kind of the steps that this president has taken, very brash ones, some of them paying off politically, but also some that have turned people off.
Talking to Scott Peterson, who's with us from Istanbul. He's been covering the elections in Iran from Tehran and is a Middle Eastern correspondent for the Christian Science Monitor. We're going to have a couple of experts joining us in just a moment. But let me ask you what you make, Scott Peterson, out of the Association of Combatant Clergy getting behind, apparently, Mousavi. This has been perhaps maybe one of the reasons, I imagine, that Ali Khamenei has at least made the switch or said he will look into and investigate the election fraud, don't you think?
Well, in fact, you know, it's interesting because one of the things that this election has shown in having these two different, very different candidates, top candidates, has shown a real division in the clergy, which is a relevant one. I mean, you've got some of the clergy who are feeling that they need to support Mousavi and his general overall opening. Part of that is driven by their unhappiness themselves with Ahmadinejad, but also there are some actual theological issues also that have made the clergy uneasy for several years. One of those things, for example, is the President Ahmadinejad's very, very close belief in this idea that the Mahdi, the 12th Shiite Imam, is going to come back. He's basically the Shiite Messiah. But the president believes that he's going to be coming back sooner, not later, as opposed to thinking this is something very, very far in the future. For President Ahmadinejad, this is something that, in fact, gave just yesterday when the press conference with the president.
I'm afraid, Scott Peterson, we're losing your line a bit here. I hope you can hear me. I just wanted to, because the line is deteriorating, thank you for joining us this morning and appreciate very much your being with us from Istanbul. And hoping that we will continue to read your coverage of this. That's Scott Peterson, who does cover and has been covering the elections from Tehran. He's now in Istanbul, and we seem to have lost that line. So let me tell you who else is going to join us for the rest of the hour. I want to welcome Abbas Milani, who is director of the Iranian Studies Program at Stanford, and he joins us from his office on the Stanford campus. Good morning to you.
Good morning, sir.
Glad to have you. Also glad to have Juan Cole, who's professor of history at University of Michigan, author of Engaging the Muslim World, and he is also the author of Informed Comment blog at juancole.com and a columnist with Salon.com. And Professor Cole, good to have you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you both for being here. And let me begin with Abbas Milani. This is going to be clearly, Ahmadinejad said that it's just like a soccer match, these passions that we're seeing in the streets of Tehran. And he's claiming, of course, that this is a mandate. The United States doesn't accept it as a landslide and yet is still saying we're going to engage Iran. Kind of puts the United States in a very tough position, does it not?
I think it does. I think the United States hope is that they would wait and find out what actually happens. I doubt, as Mr. Peterson said, that the Guardian Council will actually nullify the vote. But I think the possibility does exist for such an eventuality if the demonstrations continue. The clergy have shown historically to be very much in tune with power and understand power. Mr. Khamenei already changed his mind. His decision to meet with Mousavi was a major step. He had refused to even acknowledge the receipt of his letter. And that meeting, I think, is a clear indication that he's worried about the situation on the streets. And if it continues at the level that it has, I think it is not at all clear to me that the results will stand as they are. They will have to make some amends, I think.
Juan Cole, what's going on in terms of the blogosphere? I imagine right now that with Twitter and blogging, a lot is getting out. But for a while, almost everything was shut down. I mean, text messaging, cell phones, satellites, it seemed to be that the government really imposed strong bans.
Well, it was very suspicious, the timing of it. You started having problems with electronic communication just before the final hours of the voting were over. Facebook is down in Iran, and people have been reporting a difficulty with instant text messaging and even cell phone outages. Of course, it is not completely impossible that this is a technical problem that is not sinister. But there's a lot of suspicion out there that elements in the regime were aware that the Mousavi movement was much more technologically savvy about using these forms of communication than Ahmadinejad supporters, and that behind the scenes they pulled the plug on them. And they seem to be, a number of them seem to be dark as we speak.
Some are suggesting that even though there may have been all kinds of irregularities and rigging in this election, some even calling it a selection or a coup d'etat rather than election, I mean, millions of ballots missing, all that, that still there is a real division in Iran, that the urban centers are kind of like the blue states of the United States and the rest of Iran is almost like the red states.
Well, there's some evidence for that kind of division. However, I think it shouldn't be exaggerated. People who are doing field work in Iran report back from villages dissatisfaction with Ahmadinejad. He does have some urban support. So it's a much more mixed picture. You know, when you generalize about an election, you're really talking about millions of data points, and they're messy. They're all mixed up. The fact is that Ahmadinejad pumped a lot of money into the economy, sort of handing out goodies from the oil windfall of last year. That would secure him support from some constituents. On the other hand, when you do that, you pump a lot of extra money into the economy. Obviously, you cause inflation, and it has been as high as 30%. And that hurts farmers and people on fixed incomes, anybody who can't get a raise easily. And so there are a lot of people who've you know, seen their purchasing power deteriorate by 30% in the past year and who are really angry about it. So I would, you know, say that while it is true that probably Ahmadinejad has, you know, a balance of his support is more rural and less urban, and Mousavi's movement was more urban and less rural, that it's a mixed picture.
Well, it seems to be, though, that you could almost divide the support of Ahmadinejad with the so-called ongoing revolutionaries of the Khomeini revolution and the clerics and the poor, as opposed to the commercial class, women and youth.
Well, yeah, as I said, I just think that that's while those dynamics do exist, that it would be overly generalizing to make them so hard and fast. The you know, Mousavi is a kind of, you know, old style Islamic socialist and was in favor of nationalizing things. And there are a lot of working class people who remember him in that regard. And so he has some support from them. And then, as I said, people suffered a lot among the poor, people with fixed incomes with this inflation. So yes, maybe there's a few points towards Ahmadinejad from the poor, but I think that divide can be exaggerated.
Well, some are trying to compare Mousavi to Obama, but from what I read, he may be more like Kerry, kind of lacking in charisma, even though he has this enormous and very significant following. And I want to go back to Professor Milani. Abbas Milani is director of the Iranian Studies Program at Stanford, and ask you, Abbas Milani, about just the obvious nature of fraud in this. I mean, the state news agency announced the winner 2 hours after the polls closed. They never have announced winners before until the next morning. And there were even all kinds of choices of candidates via codes and the like that seemed designed to really lead voters off.
Well, I think the most obvious indication of the fraud is studied. It was done and published inside Iran by a statistician showing that the numbers from the moment they announced the first batch of the results, which was about, as you said, even less than 2 hours, continued to remain consistent at 65 to 35, regardless of whether it was urban precincts reporting, villages reporting. That percentage, it is statistically impossible to imagine that through the counting of 40 million votes, the difference between these two candidates remained the same. At one time, they were so clumsy in their cheating that at one time, when they realized that they haven't accounted for soiled ballots, for example, they reduced by about 100,000 the number of votes that they had given to Mr. Rezaei. So it was clearly an allotted percentage for each candidate, and then they calculated it that way forward. There are many indications that once they realized how badly they were losing, they simply discontinued the counting process and announced the results based on these predetermined percentages.
Are you, as many Iranian Americans are, concerned about the safety of, well, families and loved ones who are in Iran at this point?
I am worried about the safety of everyone in Iran, and I'm worried about the future of Iran, to be honest with you, because I think if this holds the last remnant of any democracy, which was the promise and the premise of the 1979 revolution. You have to remember that the 1979 revolution was a democratic revolution. It was abducted by Mr. Khomeini, and in its place, he created this Velayat-e-Faqih. The election system was the last hope that the people had for the democratic voices to be heard. If they get away with this one, if they get away with so outrageously and egregiously stealing an election, I think we face the possibility of an end of the election process, the creation of an Islamic regime rather than an Islamic republic. And that makes me worried for everyone inside Iran and outside Iran, because I think it bodes ill for the region, it bodes ill for U.S.-Iran relations, and it's just a sad day if they get away with it.
Well, speaking of U.S.-Iran relations, Juan Cole, let me sort of have you feel the pulse of that or get your take on it. In fact, President Obama has been criticized for not supporting the opposition enough, and after his Cairo speech, there was a good deal of hope that this election would perhaps go more the way of Mir Mousavi. I mean, what's your sense of what this does as far as U.S. wanting to engage Iran?
Well, it makes Obama's task more difficult. But, you know, I think this administration, the Obama administration, you know, is full of people who were mauled by the neoconservative sort of muscular Wilsonianism of the previous administration. And they've reverted in some ways to the realism of George H.W. Bush of the late 80s and early 90s. And their point of view on things, I think, is, you know, what the master theorist of realism, Henry Kissinger, said, that diplomacy is a game you play with the pieces on the board.
And what we call real politics.
Yeah, that's what it is. And I see lots of signs that the Obama administration feels exactly that way about it. So, you know, does the reality serve you up Netanyahu, you know, as the prime minister of Israel at a time when you want to move towards a two-state solution? Well, you know, you just deal with that. You have to deal with Netanyahu. And so I think in the same way, reality has served up Ahmadinejad, who's not a very promising negotiating partner. But they will try to deal with that regime and try to see what they can get out of dealing with it. They'll play with the pieces on the board.
Oh, we should mention that Benjamin Netanyahu announced yesterday that there would be movement, that he was in favor or countenance at least a Palestinian state, although with many conditions, of course. We're coming up on a break, and actually what I'd like to do is give out the phone number, and I know there are many of our listeners who are of Iranian descent or who are Iranian-Americans, or in fact many who voted in this election, and you may want to express your concerns here or join the program. The lines are open to all of you, however, and whether you're listening to us on radio, internet, or SiriusXM satellite, you're welcome to join the program. It's toll-free. 866-733-6786 is the number to call. And again, lines are available, and it's toll-free. 866-733-6786. You can also join us by email, and our email address is simply forum@kqed.org. We're talking with Abbas Milani, who directs the Iranian Studies Program at Stanford, and with Juan Cole, professor of history at the University of Michigan and author of Engaging the Muslim World. He's also the author of the Informed Consent blog at juancole.com and a columnist with Salon.com. And we spoke earlier with Scott Peterson from Istanbul, Middle Eastern correspondent for the Christian Science Monitor, who has been covering the elections in Iran from Tehran. Again, we welcome your calls, and we'll go to them when we return. It's toll-free, 866-733-6786, or send us an email, forum@kqed.org. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're looking at the outcome of Iran's presidential election, which took place on Friday. Demonstrations have been going on throughout the weekend, and today there were hundreds of thousands who appeared en masse in Iran, in Tehran, with the opposition candidate Mousavi present at that demonstration, talking also about the key issues as well as how this all might affect diplomatic relations between Iran and the United States. And our first caller, Ali, is with us from Tabriz, Iran. Is that correct?
Yes, it's the University of Tabriz, Iran. That's the Azerbaijan province.
And you are there, sir?
Right.
And listening to us, how?
On the Internet.
Well, we welcome you. What did you want to say about the election?
Well, primarily, I am a professor at the university here and in the political science. What I am hearing, you know, what you guys are talking about, first of all, I would like to let you know that Tehran is not whole Iran. There are 70 million people living in Iran, and there are 10 million people in Tehran. The election is fair, and the President Ahmadinejad won very fairly. And the question of the irregularity and these kind of things, of course, in every election happens. And you remember your own election at the year 2000 in America, you had problem, and there were allegations that the election was stolen by President Bush.
You're absolutely right about that. But we're reading here in the West that poll monitors were barred, that millions of ballots disappeared, and there have been fraud charges right from the beginning, particularly when the polls closed and the winner was announced less than 2 hours afterward.
Well, you know, what you're hearing from in the West, that's primarily propaganda. I am not a supporter of Mr. Ahmadinejad, but at the same time, you know, I feel like really election has been very fair, and also rest of the Iran, they are tremendously supporting of him, and those people who are they are demonstrating in the streets in Tehran, they are just a minority, and the 200,000 people walking in the streets of Tehran doesn't mean 70 million people, Iranians, are walking in the streets of their cities.
Well, sir, I much appreciate your call. And Abbas Milani, a response from you. The gentleman said it was very fair, and it's just the minority that's in Tehran.
I think the gentleman would be in a very small company of both political scientists inside Iran and outside Iran. The number of Iranian prominent Iranian intellectuals, I wish the gentleman would have given his name, because I'm sure he has no problem giving his name, as he is supporting the government's position. But we have literally hundreds of Iran's top intellectuals, scholars, artists, filmmakers, who have objected to the election, who have pointed to its irregularities. He's right. Tehran is not Iran. But when Mr. Mousavi went to the city of Tabriz, there were literally hundreds of thousands of people who appeared in the in his campaign. It was one of the biggest demonstrations in his campaign. He spoke in Turkish language, and in fact, one of the anomalies of the vote is that even in the city where he was known to be very popular, where he was known to be a person of Azeri origin, he is shown to have lost with the same margin as everywhere else.
He lost in his hometown, and so did the other two candidates, yeah.
Absolutely, everywhere. So I think, I'm sure there are a small minority of people inside Iran who think that this is a fair election. But the point is correct that Tehran is not Iran, although the population is not 10 million, it's actually 14 million. And I would think that if they are allowed, I know that the Mousavi camp is trying to have national demonstrations, and I think if the gentleman is correct, if the government is sure of its victory, if the government is sure that it has a mandate, then it would allow these demonstrations to go on, and it would show that people are not for Mr. Mousavi, and that Mr. Ahmadinejad has won fair and square. If there is no cheating, if you have this large of a mandate, you have nothing to fear. Why don't they allow the election, even in a demonstration, even in Tehran, as you indicated yourself? This demonstration was held in spite of the government's declaration that it is an illegal demonstration, government's refusal to give it the permission.
Juan Cole, do you want to weigh in here?
Well, I mean, it's just not true that the only protests are in Tehran. What I'm hearing from Iran,
is that there were clashes with police in Gorgon, in the provinces, the city in the provinces, that there were clashes in Homs, the clerical center, that in Karaj, outside Tehran, that it was alleged that Karaj is out of control of the government. There seems to be, a fairly widespread opposition to this soft coup. And it's not that people who are trying to make it seem as though it's just Tehran versus the rest of the country are not taking into account that Mousavi had a nationwide movement, and also that Ahmadinejad's forces are claiming that he won Tehran by a very large margin. So if that's true, if he in fact has two-thirds of Tehran behind him, why is it that there's such massive opposition? The numbers that they're giving out, by the way, are so uniform across the provinces also that raises suspicions. I mean, in past elections, there have been variations. You know, one candidate is more popular in one province, less popular in another. The winner would only get 15% in some province. Well, in this case, they haven't actually given us the numbers, the raw data for most of the election, but to the extent that things have appeared in Fars News and other, approved media outlets, they're just all between 57 and 63% all through the country. That doesn't make any sense. So both of those allegations, it seems to me, are incorrect.
On we go to more of your calls, and Saeed joins us. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm an Iranian-American. I voted in the elections. What I wanted to point out is that your commentator mentioned that a realist would play with the pieces on the table. This is a piece on the table, and I cannot emphasize enough that this is an immense opportunity that should not be lost for the U.S. administration to try to nudge Iran in a position of towards more freedom, which would greatly benefit the U.S. as well as the Iranian nation. This is a one in a 30 years opportunity. It's not a simple thing that happened.
Well, we thank you for your comments and appreciate your call, Saeed. I want to go to another caller here, and that's Hussein, who's joining us from San Francisco. Good morning.
Hello. Oh,
yes, sir. You're on the air.
Good morning. I'm calling from San Francisco, California. I'm an Iranian American citizen. First of all, you made some comparison between Obama and Mr. Mousavi.
No, I said that the comparisons have been made, but I said it was probably more likely to compare him to John Kerry.
Okay.
Just for the record, because I don't like to be said when I'm quoting someone else that I said it. You understand?
Clear up the record. Mousavi is another Ayatollah. Mousavi is another Ayatollah, and he is blood brother of Khamenei. This is number one. Number two, statistically, if you count the number of votes that they were ballot, that they were counted physically, during the 4 hours that they made announcement, they should have been able to count 1,533 ballots. They are... Ahmadinejad put the country in very advanced technology, even throughout the whole world.
All right, sir, we thank you. Comparing Mousavi to Ayatollah Khomeini, I guess Abbas Milani, not necessarily all that far of the mark, because he was a major figure in the revolution, in the Khomeini revolution, was he not?
He was the prime minister, and as Professor Cole mentioned, or maybe it was the earlier commentator, when he was a prime minister, he was known to be a hardliner. He was known to advocate a kind of a pseudo-Islamic socialism. But I think he has changed, and I think it is wrong to consider him as another Ayatollah. People change throughout their lives, and I think Mousavi has changed, and it is absolutely false to claim that he is the blood brother. I think what the caller is referring to is that part of Mr. Mousavi's name is Khamenei, and he has, I think, mistakenly construed this to mean that they're brothers. They're not brothers. In fact, when Mousavi was the prime minister, Khamenei was the president of Iran, and it is a matter of public record that they had enormous tensions between them. They came to public blows, and their relationship since Mousavi announced for presidency has been anything but close. So there is a kind of reductionist attitude among some in the diaspora who see this election as nothing but a facade, who see Mousavi as nothing but another Ayatollah. And I think that simplifies a complicated situation.
Well, actually, some are saying that Mousavi is under threat, possibly, because Ahmadinejad said, you know, he ran a traffic light and he got a ticket, and he was initially appeared under house arrest. I'm wondering, though, Milani, what your thoughts are about the figure of Rafsanjani in all this, because he's certainly played a prominent role in the opposition to Ahmadinejad.
I think he did, and I think if Ahmadinejad pulls this through, if he stays on as the landslide winner, I would not be at all surprised if they go after the Rafsanjani family. The allegations he has made, naming them, is very serious. But he's also made allegations against Mr. Nader Nouri, who is now the head of the office of the director of the inspectorate for the Khamenei office. In other words, the man that the president accused of financial malfeasance is the man trusted by Mr. Khamenei to be inspecting all malfeasance in the country. So it is an incredible scene. And Mr. Ahmadinejad, I think, will have no choice but to go after Rafsanjani. But we know that Rafsanjani has some power of his own. He's well entrenched in the system, and I'm not sure who will win that fight.
Juan Cole, you've been very much involved in the blogging as far as the Iranian election, and a listener wants to know if perhaps you could comment on the difference in the election coverage by bloggers, and he says, such as Andrew Sullivan on The Atlantic, as opposed to mainstream media, which has been minimal. It's almost, he says, like watching two different election aftermaths.
Yeah, that is a fair point. I think people were very disappointed in the coverage of the demonstrations against the outcome, the announced outcome of the election, on many of the mainstream media outlets. I want to underline, I have enormous respect for people who, you know, risk something to be in Tehran and to try to cover this election. But either they didn't get this story, or a lot of them, or their editors back in the United States, and that seems to me a little more likely, just considered that this was a snooze and that some other story was more compelling. But there really was a remarkably little coverage on what was supposed to be 24-hour cable and even the networks. It's a huge story, and there's enormous interest in it, and people felt that the bloggers and the electronic media were just on top of it in a way that that the mainstream media was not. And I think it does point to a problem with you know, the current configuration of things, because a story like this, you know, it's complicated. It's a foreign country. For a mass medium like television, you've got producers who really don't know the story, and editors who maybe are suspicious that a domestic gossip story would do better with ratings, whereas a lot of the blogosphere is not driven commercially, and people will just obsess. And, of course, it is also true that the wire services and some of the mainstream media we're generating news, which the bloggers were analyzing and putting out there in a way that maybe their own bosses were not.
Let me go to another caller, and Farhad, join us. You're on.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call. One of the callers mentioned that the Obama administration should make a statement on this election. I disagree with that. I think with the past history of U.S. involvement, especially in the coup of 52-53, if you come down on this election, I think it would entrench the hardliners. This issue, I think, should be played out internally. I think the people are demanding their rights, and they should really be the ones to make that decision. That's basically what my comment was.
All right, we thank you for that comment. And here's a listener, Ivis Milani, who raises a question, I don't know about the initial premise with which you might not agree. He says it seems likely that Ahmadinejad would have won Friday's election anyway. Why did the ruling elite feel the need of a Soviet-style election victory instead of just tweaking the results to push their guy over the top if need be?
I think the premise is false. I think what the listeners suggest is exactly what they did in the last election. There is good evidence to indicate that what happened in the last election when Ahmadinejad was initially elected was that they tweaked the election a little bit. They used the 5 million ID cards that, according to Mr. Karoubi, the Revolutionary Guards and the besieged control, and put Ahmadinejad over the top in the first round and made him to the second round. This time, clearly, the difference was in their own polling, so dramatic that they couldn't tweak it a little bit. Otherwise, I don't think there is any regime in the world that is stupid enough to do something like this when it doesn't need to. This undermines their legitimacy, one of their most important claims to being a quote-unquote democracy was that they had regular elections and that they counted the votes. And it was true. They have had regular elections and they have counted the votes so far. But this time, they took this giant step backward, and they must have realized that with tweaking a little bit, they're not going to win.
By the way, if you'd like to join us in the time remaining, it's toll-free 866-733-6786. You can also send an email to us, forum@kqed.org. Caller in Los Angeles, Kevin, welcome. You're on the air.
Yeah, I thank you for giving the opportunity to me. I think that the people in Iran are protesting not because they want to defend one candidate against the other, because they understand these are all propaganda schemes, and they are connected. Mousavi has been responsible for hundreds of thousands. Well, even if he wasn't responsible, he was the prime minister when hundreds of thousands of people were killed, either in prison or in the war or whatever. And Mr. Ahmadinejad, you know how he is. I think that we are following the propaganda engineering of the mullahs, who are really experts on that. They know that they couldn't continue the way it is. Therefore, they allowed all these happening to happen. Or in particular, if you listen to the debates between the candidates, you will understand that there is no way that one side, Mr. Rafsanjani, be attacked and so on. We are in a trap. And, of course, Mr. Milani, Dr. Milani, who has always believed that the Islah Taliban or reformists exist, that's what he was talking about. Mr. Khatami, who never did anything. Therefore, what I believe is the people, they have the only window to protest that they don't want this regime. But unfortunately, the mafia, they are so strong on propaganda. And unfortunately, we over here in the United States, the main media is blowing the trumpet from the wrong side.
Well, sir, it does, I think, point out dramatically, and you might want to comment on this, Abbas Milani, once again, that it really is Khamenei, Ali Khamenei, Ayatollah, who's in charge, really, isn't it?
Well, of course, Mr. Khamenei is in charge. But
I mean, it was a robust, President Obama and others, Vice President Biden particularly, said it was a robust campaign, but despite that, the mullahs rule. I mean,
yes, of course. I mean, you can say that the mullahs rule, and it would be true. And it is true that Mr. Khamenei has a disproportionate amount of power. But it's false to say that there are not rifts within the system, or that there are not different styles of ruling within the system. I think it is absurd to say that the way, for example, Khatami ruled is the same as the way Ahmadinejad ruled. Of course, in both periods, Khamenei had the upper hand.
That's absolutely true. I think the important point about the Mousavi campaign, and that's what I thought the caller was initially going to go to, is that, and many people inside Iran, in the media, in the public media, have pointed to this, that many people saw a vote for Mousavi as a no to the status quo. They tried to turn this election into a kind of a referendum on not just Ahmadinejad, but Ahmadinejad and his supporter, which first and foremost is Mr. Khamenei himself. And in that sense, the results, the unannounced results, I think were a resounding no to the status quo. The point is that are there ways of trying to undermine this absolutist clerical rule? Many people inside Iran, as I said, the bulk of the Iranian intellectual class, the artist class, with a few exceptions, like, for example, Ms. Behbahani, suggested participating in this election, many of them who had boycotted the last election, because precisely they thought this is one way of chipping away at the power of Mr. Khamenei. It is a small chip, no doubt. He still controls it, but it's an important chink in his armor. And that's why he decided that he was not going to allow the election to go. He realized that there was a mass coalition against his absolutist rule.
Well, the speculation is, even at this point, Juan Cole, that the results of this election will definitely serve to encourage voters not to vote in the next election or to feel that their votes are futile.
Well, the danger is that it makes the system more brittle and drives people to other forms of protest rather than voting. The opinion polling, the caller is right in this respect. The opinion polling in Iran is fairly consistent. 70-80% of people want the system to open up. They want more freedom of press. They want the supreme leader to be elected popularly. They want more rights for women. And this, a lot of polls have showed this, this kind of disconnect between popular sentiment and the actual policies of Khamenei and Ahmadinejad.
Juan Cole, excuse me for interrupting you, but we've just received word that gunmen have fired on opposition protesters at a massive march over the alleged election fraud, and one person at this point at least has been killed. Just wanted
Well, there will be more and more polarization of this sort. The elections and the relative fairness of the presidential election system, which, although it was heavily vetted at the beginning, you know, does in the past has allowed the people to speak. The turn towards authoritarian techniques, even in that sector that had been more on the popular sovereignty side, really means people have no recourse but to come out into the streets, to turn to violence. So we could see over the coming years a very substantial instability in Iran if the regime turns in this direction.
We're going to turn to more callers. Suzanne, thanks for waiting. Join us. Good morning.
Yes, well, you segued as I was waiting into the subject that I wanted to ask about and focus on, and that was the Guardian Council, consisting of mullahs who don't agree in the separation between church and state. But I especially after hearing this new news about the violence that has erupted and the shooting that has taken place, really, for those of you who understand the way the government works in Iran, how exactly is it possible, without forcing these young people to be in the line of fire and for there to be another bloody revolution, is there no way that the people who are in the organizations in the government to bring down the Guardian Council? It seems that we only want to resort to forcing people, ordinary people, to go into the streets. And isn't there an option to that?
Professor Milani.
Well, unfortunately, this is not the first death. Last night, goons connected to the government, these militias, attacked the Tehran University and student dormitories, and there are reported that at least one student was killed last night. So if this is another one. This would be the second one. The Guardian Council is part of the problem, but it is not the problem. What people have been trying to do is precisely to avoid bloodshed. I think one of the reasons this regime has survived, in spite of the polling that Professor Cole reported to, referred to, in other words, in spite of the fact that people have been opposed to this regime has survived because people don't want a bloody revolution. They don't want another confrontation like 1979. And the regime has used this fear to maintain itself. And the only way that seems possible, I think, is massive civil disobedience at a kind of a level that would not allow the regime the possibility of using its goons and its militia to suppress it. That's the only way I know of, and the only way many people inside Iran think can be used to go from the current state to what the majority of Iranians seem to know is the future and want as the future, which is a more democratic Iran. How we get there without bloodshed is what everybody is looking for, and it's a difficult thing to find when you have a regime that is willing to kill.
That's going to be the final word because we have reached the end of this hour, but I want to extend thanks to Abbas Milani, Director of the Iranian Studies Program at Stanford, for joining us this hour. Thank you, Professor Milani.
And thank you.
Thanks also to Juan Cole, professor of history, University of Michigan, and author of Engaging the Muslim World. He's also author of the Inform comment blog at juancole.com and a columnist with Salon.com. And again, Professor Cole, thanks for joining us. I want to also thank Scott Peterson, who was with us earlier from Istanbul, a Middle Eastern correspondent for the Christian Science Monitor, who is covering the elections from Iran. And thank you, our listeners. We have another hour of Forum coming your way. And in the hour ahead, we're going to talk about how it's more difficult in this California fiscal crisis for poor defendants to get a fair trial. We're going to talk to public defender Jeff Adachi, among others. I want to thank our senior editor, Dan Zoll, and our producers, Kevin Guillory, Tina Lauerberg, Amanda Stupai. Our engineer is Danny Bringer, and our executive producer is Raul Ramirez. And for all of us at KQED, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Claude and Louise Rosenberg Jr. Family Foundation.